Good morning. So recently, my husband and I, we were in a fight. A normal marriage thing, you know? But what stuck about it was that even though the content was different, it felt like that same fight. That same one we've had over and over and over. And I could just feel myself acting in a way that I disliked. But I felt like I had no power over it. And I was saying, sorry, but this was so scripted. It was so incredibly insincere. And I was kind of using this like mopey tone, kind of just saying sorry so the argument could end, not really desiring to resolve the conflict, more feeling stubborn about how I had been wronged. And towards the end, he called me out on first the worst apology ever. And then he added, you know what the worst part about this is? I feel like I'm arguing with your mom. And the worst part for me was when I stopped and reflected that he was right. How many couples have been there? And I'm sure my mom and dad have had that same exact fight with that same exact ending. Can something new happen then in human history? Can something new happen in our lives? Or are we destined for a cyclical life where we just keep repeating and replaying what has gone before? Can something new happen in human history? I think for the disciples, James, Peter, and John, those central characters we hear about in our gospel today, I think they were risking hope as they followed Jesus, believing, yeah, something new can happen in human history. Having been raised in tight-knit Jewish communities, they would have been immersed in their ancestral story. They would have heard and known by heart the story we heard today in our first reading, the story of the call of Abraham. That story that comes near the beginning of their and our sacred book. They would have known that Abraham was called after the chaotic stories of life outside the Garden of Eden, life ridden with human violence, evil, and pride. They would have known that when God said, "Go forth from the land of your kinfolk," he was calling Abraham to break the destructive patterns of life that had gone before him. And they would have known that Abraham, a nobody with no credentials, was called by God on a great adventure to a new land and a new way of living. And they would have known the covenantal promise made by God to Abraham, "I will make a great nation out of you, and all nations will find blessing in you." Abraham, for them, for us, is God's sign to the world that there can be a new thing in human history, that we are not stuck in repetition of the same old human story of chaos and human destruction, that God desires to work in history through humans. So God makes a covenant with Abraham, not because of anything again that Abraham had done, but because God is committed to us human beings, to rescue us while we are still in our cycles of sin. And in Abraham, God makes the impossible possible. A man with a wife, the two of them so old that they are close to death, a child is birthed. Out of death bursts forth new life, And with this birth, a fragile project is put in motion. Abraham's family were called to live in a way where all people would look to them and be blessed. And this blessing would radically reorient human hearts towards God rather than away, towards life rather than towards death. Yes, Peter, James, and John, they would have known Abraham's story well, and they would have known that it didn't go as planned. They would have known the heartbreak of their ancestors, how they were enslaved and rescued by God, how they were given the law to guide their living, to bless all nations. But they would have known, too, of the failure of their kingdom in the Promised Land and the experience of the exile to Babylon. But hanging on to the promises God made to Abraham, to Israel, to King David, they risked hoping that God would be faithful to them, to their people, despite their failures. They were waiting in first century Palestine, living under a Roman occupation. They were waiting, anticipating the messianic era to arrive, for God's vision of blessing for the world to make itself real, for the covenantal promises to be fulfilled. And so I can only imagine that when Jesus called them, Peter, James, and John, they felt a close kinship with Abraham. Perhaps they too felt like nobodies, felt like they had no moral qualifications. And perhaps they felt Abraham's courage as they left their nets, their father's house, their kin, to follow him. And I can only imagine that they had begun to think, okay, this has to be the something new happening in human history we've been waiting for. I mean, they had seen this man's healing power. They had listened to his teaching authority. They saw him walk on water. So when Jesus asked them, "Who do you say that I am?" Peter earnestly proclaimed, probably what the others felt, "You are the Messiah, the one to usher in the messianic age." Yes, something new was happening in human history. But then Jesus revealed how he would be the Messiah through dying. And Peter gave voice to what the others must have felt. No. That would be just the same story that has always played out. If you die, it's over. This is not the messianic age. This is not something new in human history. Then sin and death have the final say, and history keeps simply repeating itself. Shortly after, Jesus revealed his identity of being the Messiah to his disciples, he took those three, his close friends, Peter, James, John, to a mountain. And on this mountain, he became radiant, transfigured. He was like the burning bush. He was like the pillar of light that led the Israelites through the desert to the Promised Land. He was like the glowing Holy of Holies that was at the center of their temple of old. Mountain, white light, shining like the sun. These are images connected to their God. These are images of the power of the one who changes history. Then a voice confirming Jesus' identity, confirming his connection with God the Father. "This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." And so they fear, for were they in the real presence of the Most High God? Was he right here? Jesus immediately comforts them, saying, "Do not be afraid." He speaks the same words that had been spoken by their God through the ages, from Abraham to the prophets. And so, together, perhaps in shock, they all descend down the mountain. And as they descend, Peter, James, and John very well may have been wondering, what was Jesus' special relationship to their God? Still maybe wondering, is he the Messiah? Then Jesus says, "Don't tell anyone of this until the Son of Man is risen from the dead." Again, he mentions this dying and rising. And it wouldn't be until later that all the pieces would come together for these disciples, that on that mountain was their God. And this is how God transforms human history, by becoming the innocent victim that passes through the horrors of crucifixion and is raised to new life as a sign and promise for the future of all. And God desires our participation in all of this. God does not just call Abraham, not just the disciples like Peter, James, and John. Today, Jesus is calling us. He is calling us not because we have done anything that makes us morally superior. He calls us not because we have proven ourselves through some sort of resume, some sort of spiritual enlightenment. No, we are called just as we are, right now, bumbling along imperfectly, repeating the sins of our parents, feeling like failures or unsuccessful or unworthy, or feeling like nobodies. God calls us to be transfigured with him, to share in the glory of his holy life, and to show us that he does not need us to be anything other than what we are right now. He freely enters all the messiness of human life. He enters the darkness, the evil, and death. There is not a place in human life where God does not enter. There is not a place where God's life does not touch. And God wishes to rescue this world, to raise all of it to new life. We can accept his life, his transformative life. We can accept it, allowing it to transform us right now. Through being in community, by hearing his word, by gathering around this table and partaking in the Eucharist, we can accept his life by allowing his love to literally enter into us, just as we are. Allow his grace to touch our wounds and our brokenness, and allow ourselves to hear his voice whisper in our ear, "My child, yes, something new can happen in human history. I want to make it happen through you." Do we have the courage to say, Amen?